Thank you very much. My name's Kent Palmer, and I'm going to be talking about the foundations of general schemas theory, which is probably something you've never heard of before. So I'm going to try to explain very quickly what that is in the brief time we have. There's a more extensive briefing that's going to be on the internet where you can see the slides that I'm not presenting today. So the significant points that I want to get across in this talk is that are these, that the current most likely foundation of systems engineering is systems theory. Okay, so that's one of the places I start, is that systems engineers should know systems theory. And most systems engineers don't know systems theory. So that's a fundamental problem right there, I think. There is an academic discipline that is in the universities that addresses our subject, and we ought to know it. Okay, so that's like the first major point. And then the next point is that emergence is something which is a fundamental viewpoint on systems and on systems engineering. So emergence is a very important concept, and we ought to talk about it, and so I'm going to be talking about it a lot in this talk. And then the next point is that there are specific levels of emergence, some of which are addressed by current systems engineering and others that aren't, but should be. So there are different emergent levels of emergence, and we're going to be talking about those in this talk. Then the key point that I hope that I can get to in my slides is that systems engineering itself as a discipline is structured by those levels of emergence. In other words, there are specific levels of emergence, and those levels of emergence give us the structure of systems engineering. So I'd like to try to prove that point to you today. And then the next major point that I'd like to make in this briefing is that, you know, we're always talking about systems, right? But there are other schemas besides systems. There are forms. There are patterns. There are other things besides systems. And in fact, we use the word system too much. And it has lost its meaning because everything is a system. You hear people saying, everything is a system. But the thing is that the meaning of the word system only comes from the comparison with other schemas, like form and pattern. And if we don't understand the differences between the system schema and other schemas, then the system won't ever have any meaning for us. And that's one of our problems. So one of the things that I would like to get across to you is that ultimately systems engineering needs to become schemas engineering based on schemas theory. In other words, systems are not enough. Our problems are so complex and so difficult, especially when we get into human systems and global systems, that we cannot just depend on the system schema. We have to embrace other schemas as well. So those are the major points that I want to make in this briefing. I thought I'd make them all on the first slide, just in case I didn't get to the rest of them. Okay. So now, one of the things that, you know, I think that I'm glad that I was last here in this series of presentations, because one of the things I want to try to convince you of is that we're here in the middle with a horizon called systems engineering. And what I want to do is try to say there are broader horizons, and we should look at the broader horizons beyond systems engineering. And the first broader horizon beyond systems engineering is emergence engineering. In other words, one way to look at systems engineering is that we are creating emergent things, right? They may be systems, they may be forms, patterns, other schemas, but they're emergent things. That means they have characteristics beyond what their parts encompass. And then I would like to put across the idea later in the briefing that there's something even beyond emergence engineering, which is schemas engineering. In other words, a form of engineering that brings into play all of the schemas, not just systems, but all of the schemas that human beings are capable of using to understand the world. Whoops, wrong way. Okay, so now in this slide you'll see little asterisks up at the slide, and those are the slides I'm presenting. So in my larger briefing, there's a bunch of slides left out, and what I did is I created a series of maps, and we're going to be jumping, like skipping across the water here, the first few slides till we get to the major point I want to make. But the question in this slide here is systems engineering as a discipline transformative or not? And by transformative, what I mean is a discipline which changes the relationships between other disciplines when it appears. In other words, you see a transformative discipline by its impact on other disciplines. And a test case is software engineering in relation to computer science. Software engineering has changed computer science from what it was because it brought new problems, new approaches, new things that computer scientists had to think about because software was being used in more and more places in our society, and we needed new methods, new processes, new tools in order to make that happen. Okay, when you think about systems engineering, it has a broader scope because its complement in academia is all other engineering disciplines. That's a real leverage problem because in order to change all other engineering disciplines, we've got to bring a lot to the table, and we're not bringing very much to the table right now. So could we put questions to the end, please? Okay. Because I have a lot of material to get through, and I like to try to get through as much of it as possible. Okay, so one way of thinking about systems engineering discipline as transformative is to relate it to things that we know are transformative already, like complex systems theory, complex adaptive systems, chaos theory. We know that those things have brought change to the other disciplines, and what's interesting is we don't have a lot of talk about it here. Right? I mean, there are whole conferences about these things, but we haven't incorporated them into our thinking as much as we should, I believe. But even beyond that, I mean, those are all things that exist out there in the literature to talk about. Even beyond that, there is the ontic and ontological levels of emergence and the impact of emergence as a concept and as a phenomena. And when I talk about ontic and ontological, that's more or less, the ontic is as a phenomena, and the ontological is as a theory. Okay, so skipping a few slides, I mean, the bottom line to this section is that systems engineering means engineering large-scale emergence. Systems engineering is where emergence is, systems engineering is where emergence appears. Where there's an appearance of new properties at the level of the whole not seen in the parts. So examples that we all know are the cell in the organism, like hydrogen and oxygen with water, subsystem, system, supersystem. Those are what we're talking about when we're talking about emergence. And the problem of emergence appears in other disciplines, right? But the point I want to make is that it comes to a head in systems engineering because we are trying to get such a high level of emergence, bringing so many different kinds of systems together, that emergence becomes a very key concept for us, more key than other disciplines. And so that's why I think that as a discipline, we should address this question of emergence directly. So if we begin to think of systems engineering as large-scale emergence engineering, then our view of the discipline will change radically. And when we change our vision of SE, it changes its relation to other disciplines. And emergence engineering must be a transformative discipline in relation to other disciplines, but also in relation to itself. In other words, we have to understand how we transform ourselves to impact other disciplines. Okay, so here's the next map. And we'll be going through these pieces of the map bit by bit. So I'll be showing this map over and over again. And the first thing we're going to talk about is the relationship between supervenience, de-emergence, and emergence. Okay, this is a graphic that depicts the relationship between supervenience and emergence. Supervenience is not a term I came up with. It's something from analytical philosophy. And basically what it says is that a supervenience is a homeomorphism from one emergent level down to the lower level emergent level. In other words, there has to be supports at the lower emergent level to make a emergent level, a higher emergent level possible. And they use the word supervenience for that homeomorphism between the two levels. But besides that homeomorphism, there's this other thing, which is the emergent excess. And the way to think about this is that the higher level is a gestalt. You know, the psychologists talk about a gestalt. And a gestalt is a whole greater than the sum of its parts. Well, that greater than the sum of its parts, that's the emergent excess. And basically, when you have an emergence happen, right, which is like a synthesis, we talk about synthesis in systems engineering, then you get a qualitative and quantitative jump between the levels. And you get new characteristics at the higher level that did not exist at the lower level. So, for instance, an example is like the cell and the organism. Okay. Now, we'll talk about de-emergence. De-emergence is usually done by reductionism. In other words, you're trying to take something that's whole and break it into its parts, and that breaking it into its parts is done by reductionism. You're trying to reduce it to the lowest common denominator. And when you do that, you lose a lot of knowledge, information, and so forth. So the parts, once you have those parts, don't add up to the whole, and you cannot reconstitute the whole from the parts. And now, but here's the important part, is that when you look back at the higher level, after you've de-emerged, right, and you've broken it all into its parts through analysis or whatever, that higher level now looks differently, right? And so in this talk, I'm going to be talking a lot about how that higher level looks, which is different. And I call that the proto-gestalt. You know, the other one was the gestalt, this one's the proto-gestalt. And the proto-gestalt is basically a whole less than the sum of its parts. And, for instance, we have Bohm's idea of the implicate order. One of the things that we don't really understand very well, but we should understand better, is that actually that de-emergent level that we've left has a structure. And we don't normally think about that structure, which is the complement of the system. Now, I call that complement of the system a metasystem. And the idea is that there's a perfect complementarity between a system and a metasystem, but we tend to only see systems and not see these complementary metasystems that have structure. But let me give you an example of it. And the example is like an operating system in the computer and the applications. When you turn on a computer, if it didn't have fake applications in it, you wouldn't think it did anything, right? You have to have the applications to make that computer do something. So there's a whole structure we call the operating system, which is a metasystem or environment or context or media that we need in order to run these applications. And we have in our culture, we have this bias that we see systems everywhere, but we don't see the environment. And that's why we have environmental destruction, and we have all of those problems that are unanticipated that other speakers were talking about. And so we really need to be able to look at this de-emergent level the proto-Gestalt, or what I call the meta-system, and understand that it has a structure of its own. And we'll be dealing with that more as we go through here. Okay, now, we've been talking about mathematics and formalization, so I would like to put out a conjecture. And that conjecture is that emergent properties are Gödelian. And this could be the basis for formalizing the concept of emergence, right? And the basic idea that is that you have an axiom, a system of axioms, and then you have undecidable statements. Undecidable statements, you can't decide whether they're inside or they're outside. Okay, now the point that my conjecture is that if you combine those undecidable statements with the axioms, you've got emergence. But if you combine the if you decide that those undecidable statements are outside, you've got de-emergence. And so, you know, I don't know specifically this is true. Like, for instance, I don't have a proof of this. But I believe that this is a way of looking at the concept of emergence that would allow it to be formalizable in terms of the Gödelian proof. Right. Right.
How you group those sets.
That's what I think.
Mix those sets.
Right. That's what I think. Because there is this class. See, before Gödel, we didn't know there were undecidable statements. But with him, we learned there's these undecidable statements. And what my hypothesis here is that when we talk about the emergent properties of the thing, we are making undecidable statements when we talk about those emergent properties. Well, it used to be thought that decidable and undecidable were mutually... it used to be thought that the decidable inside and decidable outside were mutually exclusive, but the indecidability introduced ambiguity. So, anyway, let's not stick on this point very long. Okay. So, now, the main way that emergence appears in the systems that we produce is that we take some boxes, right? And then we create something at a higher level of emergence, like a hardware box or some software or whatever, and then we put those together to get a higher level of emergence, and so forth on up the line. And so, if we viewed our job as mostly integrating emergences, then the point that I want to make in this slide is that we'd only get to emergence level 2, right? In other words, there's emergence of emergences, but then what about emergence level 3, a next emergent meta level of emergence. Okay, we can't get there from here. And the point is that I think that systems engineering needs to grow into these higher levels of emergence. And that is our frontier. Okay, and the next thing I'm going to talk about, and this is where things start to get difficult, is that... there are meta-levels of emergence, and there's meta-levels of being. And these are them. Okay, so the point is that the way to talk about this is that when I did my PhD at London School of Economics, I did it on the concept of emergence. And one of the things I did was I went out and looked at continental philosophy and tried to use Russell's idea of the theory of higher logical types to understand what continental philosophers were talking about. And what I discovered was that what they were talking about was that there are meta-levels of being. Okay? Before the word ontology was mentioned. And all of these ontologies that you hear about are down here at what's called pure being level. But there's when the ontologies transform, and that is the process being level. And then there is the next level up, where possible ontologies come into existence, right? There's another level up. And then there's even a higher level. So there's these different levels of being where ontologies themselves have different meta levels. And at each meta level, we're talking about there has to be a language at the new meta level to understand what's going on at the lower level. So anyway, I did my research about these meta levels of being, and that was a long time ago. But the what I discovered when I was doing this presentation, something I never thought of before, even though I had studied this phenomena of emergence in terms of the meta levels of being, was that emergence itself has meta levels. And I never realized that before. I thought emergence was one thing, right? But in doing this briefing, I discovered that no, there's actually different meta levels of emergence. And we need to understand, if we're going to transform our discipline by bringing in the concept of emergence, there's not just one concept of emergence. There's multiple concepts of emergence, and they have a structure. They have a structure that they're organized into meta levels, and we need to be able to try to step up those meta levels. The problem is that at each meta level, it becomes harder to think about what each one of these things are. But because there is this analogy with established ontology in continental philosophy between those levels of being and the levels of emergence, we can kind of infer what those meta levels of emergence might be, and that's what I've done in this paper. Now, this slide is just to let you know where we're going, right? And where we're going is up this stair step to nowhere, right? And the stair steps to nowhere is through these meta levels of emergence. And why it is a stair step to nowhere is an interesting point. And I think a very important point, which is what I discovered in my research in England, was that these meta levels end at level 4. Okay? And there's a phase transition that happens into the concept of existence. And so in our philosophical tradition, we have both the idea of existence and we have the idea of being. But one thing that I discovered was that these have a relationship to each other, and that relationship is expressed in this stair step to nowhere, in that at a certain point, being stops and you go into existence. So this is just to let you know we're going to go up these stairs. But we're going to talk about, there has to be something called emergent difference, and ontology covers the various standings of everything that presents or absents itself phenomenologically. Ontological difference distinguishes those standings of the various beings which have those various standings, right? But emergent difference relates to the intensification of nihilism. And so one of the things that's going to be key in this presentation is distinguishing the lower levels of emergence, which are what I call artificial or nihilistic, and the genuine emergence, because it's only when you make that phase transition into emergence at the fifth level, existence, that you get genuine emergence. So a lot of the kinds of emergence that we're dealing with are still artificial and nihilistic levels of emergence. So hopefully you'll just take that on faith. And and you can read some of the papers on the website about that. Okay, let's start at emergence level 0, right? So emergence level 0 is non-new change. It's more of the same. It's just random alteration. And on the ontology side, it's just beings. All the stuff in this room, you know, beings, entities, things, that's all the stuff that is at emergence level 0. And so I'm going to give some examples as we go along. They're not very good examples, but they're all I could think of at the time. And so like an example of this is when we cross this point of emergent difference is that we go out from that just random change to something which is like the entry of the new. So the new, is if all the changes we're talking about are not new, then they can't be emergent, right? We're talking about levels of newness when we talk about this. And so an example of this non-new change is like car wear. You know, I mean the wear on your car, right? I mean it's just more of the same, and we have to replace parts and things like that. But we're not creating new parts to deal with car wear. Something else that I just want to make a point about, but I'm actually not going to talk about very much, but if you see the slides, you'll see this, is that being has four aspects to it. And those four aspects are truth, reality, identity, and presence. And these aspects change at each meta level. So what truth is changes as we go up the meta levels. What reality is changes as we go up the meta levels. And that's true of all these aspects of being. But when I talk about this, I'm not going to talk, I mean, you can look at the slides to see that, and I tried to put in my slides how those change at each meta level, because that gives you an idea of what the characteristics of that meta level are. Okay, so the first, now, when I go through this, I'm not going to talk about the being side. I'm just going to let you read that, and some of those words up there are not going to make much sense to you if you haven't studied philosophy for a long period of time. But I'm going to try to talk about the what's in the box, right, which is the emergent side, right, and then give an example of it on the emergent side. So emergence level one is pure artificiality. It's combinatoric expansion. It's superficial newness, additive or incremental improvement. Nothing fundamental changes, right? An example is new cars every year, new stereos every year, new fashions, right? Nothing fundamental changes, but we want it anyway because they say it's new, okay? So newness has entered the picture, but we don't know why we want that new thing. It is not really new. It's just marketing, new in terms of marketing. Okay, the next level of emergence becomes an event. It takes time for something to be what it is. Emergent change reveals the essence of the thing seen. And it's like a catalysis is an example of this. And an example of this is going from a buggy, horse-drawn carriage, to a car, right? That was an emergent change at this level of emergence. In other words, there was an event when the car was introduced. We didn't know that the whole infrastructure of the country was going to be changed by that. We didn't know all of the fundamental changes in our society that were going to happen by these strange things that people were driving around in that looked like buggies, but where were the horses? You know, So that's the next level of emergence, the next level of newness. Okay, the third level of emergence is where we project new possibilities on new horizons. And this is where the undecidability is important, because the emergence itself becomes undecidable at this point. And the emergent excess is Gödelian. That's where that emergent excess that's Gödelian comes from. And so I have written a series of papers where I talk about software as being at this level of being. In other words, software is an excellent example of something at the hyper-being level. And all the problems we have with software, if you take all of the problems that you know about software and you put them all together, that's what hyper-being is, okay? And so the thing is, yeah, it's like being hyper. Okay, but now we have cars with software, okay? So having cars with software is a problem. You know, it introduces all kinds of features that we couldn't have before, all kinds of integration of the car that we couldn't have before, but if that software has bugs in it or needs to make intelligent choices about the environment, then we're in trouble, right? So anyway, software is an example of something at the hyper-being level. So that nature of software, right, is a little bit like what is emerging at emergence level 3. And what's so interesting about software is that software is a specific entity in our world with those characteristics. And try to find another one. I mean, there are very few other things in our world with the characteristics of software. Now, it just turns out that there is a level above the hyper-being level, where emergence level 4 occurs. And so, at this level, we have we have actualizing the new possibilities on the new horizon. I mean, at the last level, we just had new possibilities and new horizons, right? Now we have actualizations of those new possibilities on those new horizons. And this is where emergence becomes intrinsically unpredictable and where chaos theory enters the picture. And basically, it reveals unexpected, unheard of, unthought of, anomalous appearances from a direction previously unknown. Okay? Now, the thing is that we have stuff like that coming into our world all the time. And when it comes into our world, it changes our world, right? So, but what we do with software, which is interesting, is we want to write deterministic software. And so what we do is all of the things like code rewriting itself, we throw over into the bin of AI. Right? All of neural networks, code written like our brains are written, we throw into the bin of AI. And so artificial intelligence is a kind of field where all of these difficult things get thrown into, and when they become useful or determinate or we understand them, then we bring them back into software. But for a while, we throw them into a field called artificial intelligence. And so you can think of this fourth meta level as being like artificial intelligence. But artificial intelligence is an interesting thing because when we have a concept, we know what that means, right? But an AI system, when it's thinking, we have no idea of what it's thinking. And all of the things that it's using to think are opaque to us. And so that opacity, that incomprehensibility of AI systems, especially where you combine an expert system, a neural net, self-rewriting code, you combine all those things together, that's what wild being is like. So that's like what appears at emergence level 4. Now the interesting thing is that when you're going up these levels of being, now being just means intelligibility or projection, right? And so the thing is that there's a certain point where you can't think it anymore. And that's when you run into existence. When you can't project intelligibility on the thing anymore. See, because what's happening is we're going up this stair step to nowhere. First of all, we start off with plenty of room to think. Then we go to the next level and we have less room to think. We go to the next level, we have less room to think. When we get to the wild being level, it's just a plane. There's no room to think. It's just a plane. And when we get to this level, that plane vanishes. We can't think this level. So what I realized when I wrote this briefing was that that's when genuine emergence occurs. Because when we can't think it, that means it's something that is really different, that's coming at us, either from the inside as a new theory or from the outside as a new phenomena. Like, for instance, the phenomena of superconductivity. It took them 20 years to just come up with a theory that might work, right? It was a phenomena they discovered in the lab that they could not cope with for 20 years, right? There's also emergence that comes from the inside, and that are when we have completely new theories, like Einstein's relativity theory, right? Where we have to learn how to rethink everything because we have put the ideas together in a completely new way. So emergence can either come from the inside of us or from the outside as phenomena, and we need to keep that in mind all the time. But when we get to the point where it is unthinkable, that's when we get to the point of existence, where there is no projection anymore. But what's interesting is that those things that are genuinely emergent, when they appear, they give us a face of the world. In other words, what the world is that we live in is all of these four different kinds of being put together. And when we see something that has them all together, then that is a face of the world. We're looking at a face of the world. So an example here is like a flying car or a completely new media like the internet. I mean, it's something that just changes everything. Okay, so emergence means, in this model, right, history is rewritten. Right? New future possibilities appear while old future possibilities vanish. What is present is seen in a completely new way, as either a new theory, or at a deeper level, a new paradigm, or at a deeper level, a new episteme. Foucault talks about epistemes. Heidegger talks about these epics of interpretation of being changes. And even the mythos is reformatted. In other words, our fundamental myths about ourselves and about society and world, they change, right? And SE doesn't deal with this stuff, right? I mean, now it doesn't even come close. But the thing is that we need to start moving toward dealing with these higher levels of emergence. But this genuine emergence, where it appears in our society, is things like futurology, venture capital, far-out IR&D projects. I mean, that's kind of where we see this in our society. So then, when we look at this stair step again, now we've been through the steps, we can look at the stair step again. And so we start off with at the level E0, where non-emergent change, and then that super, you know, there's something at the next level up, which is supervenient, and the added thing is combinatoric or additive change. And then we go up to the next level up, E2, it becomes a process. Instead of being a noun at E1, it becomes a verb at E2. It becomes a process of emergence. And so we get essencing forth in time. In other words, when a fetus develops into a human being, it goes through these changes, these fundamental changes in its development. So you get this essencing forth in time. And then you get the next level up, which is this emergent excess, which is at E3, where all these different horizons of possibilities appear. And then at E4, you get radically unpredictable unknowns appearing as anomalies. And then all of those things together become what I call ultra-being, which is a genuine emergence. Right? But when you go past that up into this existence level, then you hit the unthinkable, right? And sometimes certain interpretations of the unthinkable is in terms of, like, in Buddhism, emptiness, and in Taoism, the void. And one of the reasons I think that those kinds of things are popular for people to think about now is because they are ways of looking at the world that take into account this unthinkability that's a fundamental part of the world. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the emergence engineering meta-levels. And my fundamental hypothesis that I want to get across in this session, which is that I believe that our SE discipline is actually structured by these emergent meta levels. So this is one crack at how that might be true. So at E0, we have all of our interim artifacts and our vicissitudes of work. And then what's supervenient to those are these products that we deliver, the nouns, right? But those products keep changing, right? And that's a big problem. So we have change control to deal with the changes of those products. And that change control treats it as in a combinatoric and additive way. But even that control is not enough, right? What we've discovered is that we need to actually control our behavior when we are producing these systems. And so that's why we have CMMI process and so forth, and because we need to deal with the essencing forth in time of those products, those intermediate products, to produce the actual system in the end. So it's not just the human processes, it's the processes of the products unfolding to reach the final goal that's dealt with at this E2 level. And then one of the things that I was really happy to hear about in the plenary system sessions was this emphasis on architecture, because I really think that this emergent level 3 is where we run into architectural problems. We run into all the different possibilities of architectures, methods, processes, architectural frameworks. I mean, look how many different object-oriented methods there are. Look at how many functional methods there are. Look how many methods there are. I mean, there are myriad methods being created all of the time to deal with this architectural problem, which is also, in the other direction, an analysis problem, because you analyze the possibilities and come up with an architecture. So it's kind of like a two-way thing. So if we go up to, so that's emergent level 3, and so then you would expect all of those weird aspects of software to come into play in terms of those architectures. And so we present architectures as if they're determinate things, but if they're really at that E-level 3, there's going to be a lot of ambiguity about those architectures and how you decide which architecture to use and so forth. Okay, so then, but then we have this other aspect of systems engineering that we have a hard time explaining why it's there, and that's the specialties. And so they're usually people off in a corner doing a particular thing that's outside of the normal production process, like working on reliability or maintainability or life cycle cost. They're doing what seems to be subsidiary tasks to the main task of development. But I would say that those specialties, the fact that we need those specialties is a characteristic that comes from the fact that there is this emergence level 4 where there are, you know, if you don't look at the whole when you're designing the thing, you're going to make all these errors, you're going to leave stuff out. That's what it means by errors and voids there. You're going to have all these errors and voids because you haven't had a broad enough vision. And you need to take into account the anomalous things that are going to happen in the environment that show up at that emergent level 4. And then the emergent level 5 is where I think the system comes into being, and where systems engineering as a discipline comes into being. That genuine systems engineering appears at that emergent level 5 where as a genuinely emergent event, you're looking back on all of these different kinds of artificial emergence and these different parts of systems engineering, and you're bringing them all together and you're seeing it as a whole thing, as a face of the world. And when you bring all of those different kinds of emergence together and see them as a face of the world, then I think that's what systems engineering is. Now, once you get that ultra being level, the next step is to go into this level of existence, right? And see, the thing is that systems engineering doesn't exist on its own. There are all these other engineering disciplines, and there's the whole university system, right? And so there's like a niche up in the university system. There's a niche up in the engineering schools that systems engineering needs to rise to the occasion and fill that niche. And so that's the proto-gestalt or the meta-system or environment that we need to fit into. But also, systems engineering, normally what they do mostly is develop prototypes for manufacturing. And so you can see manufacturing as the niche in which the designed systems that we produce in systems engineering need to fit into. And so there's those meta systems that have niches for systems engineering act as filters on systems engineering. In other words, they have characteristics that they need us to fulfill to become a part of that system. And we're not fulfilling them. I mean, we have an academic journal now, and we're starting to do academic research. You know, we are trying to gather the characteristics together that we can fit up into the academic system, right? And similarly, when we produce designs of systems, there are certain characteristics that manufacturing needs for those design systems to become producible systems. And so that's kind of the difference between the existence level and the being level. Okay, so the main point here is that the whole discipline of systems engineering is structured by the meta levels of emergence. And systems engineering is intrinsically emergence engineering. But is systems engineering enough even when it's viewed as emergence engineering? Perhaps we need something broader than the focus on the emergence of systems, which is dependent on the system schema alone. In other words, okay, once we've transformed our discipline by realizing, hey, emergence is important and we ought to come to terms with the fact that we're producing emergent systems, then we need to start exploring a broader horizon. And that broader horizon is that systems aren't the only things in the world. There are other schemas that we project on the world that are equally valid to systems, and we need to have a discipline that takes those into account in order to give the word system meaning. Yes?
May I request convergence?
Okay. I'll stop at that point then.
Let me parse this. There is additional material you prepared. There's not enough time for it. And I know several months ago you sent me about a 60-page chapter or something in your book, which didn't end up anywhere. I would be willing to commit to you that we can publish that entire essay that you wrote, that chapter.
Oh, okay.
In our proceedings, in the internet.
Oh, okay. Great.
Side of it.
Sure. Well, the good part about this is, besides the fact that you don't have to listen to any more of this, is that the paper that I wrote that's in the proceedings is the other part. So if you read that paper in the proceedings, it's said way better in there than I could say it here in a brief span of time.
Thank you.
Sure.